Blog Talk Radio.
Intro music, we coming up in the world. I can't believe it. Oh, my God. This is the fourth episode. Do not miss God. Man, we got Trey on the line. Hold on. Let me see if I can get Trey to come through.
Man,
Trey
is here.
Are you there?
I am here.
Man, did you hear the intro music, though? That's crazy.
I heard the intro music, man.
Too loud. I need to cut it down some, and we might have some outro music. But praise the Lord. I'm glad to be here another day. This is the fourth episode of the Choose to Joy broadcast. Don't miss God, number four. And, man, Trey, I just want to tell you thank you, man. You've been here every day. We, you know, we kind of talk before the show. We got to get situated. We got kids and stuff and everything. And I just want to tell you thank you for being honest, man. Most people I know personally don't open their life up like this, man. And I just want to tell you I appreciate it, man.
Well, man, I'm glad to be able to do it, man, if it can help somebody else, man, to not miss God, man. And it's just a blessing to be an opportunity to be able to be honest and share and think about somebody else and not myself.
And that's what's going down, man. And so I guess we're going to just hop right in it, man. We're going to do a little recap. And we got a little bit more time on this episode. And let's hop on in it, man. What Trey is doing, what we're talking about is don't marry the wrong person. And really it's bigger than just marrying the wrong person. As we discussed, it's about not getting into wrong relationships. Don't make bad decisions. And ultimately, do not go forth in something that the Lord specifically tells you not to do. It mess up your whole life. Trey started out as a young man. We went through three of his relationships. We really got to four, but we'll recap the first three. The first one, he was 14 or 15, was going into the eighth grade of the summer of his eighth grade year, and he ended up losing his virginity to his junior high school sweetheart, and y'all was having sex every single day of the summer. Am I right, Trey?
Well, I don't know about that, man, but pretty close to it, man. It was a lot more than it should have been, a lot more than should have even been reasonable to have opportunity to. But yeah, it was pretty much every day, man. That's what we did.
You developed strong feelings for her. Y'all had spent all your time with each other. That's how Trey, when Trey dates you, your time is going to be his time is going to be yours, he's going to do everything for your family. He's going to take you and your family to Ruth Chris. He's going to spend money on you.
Come on, man.
Like if I, that's how I always do. But anyway, y'all go off to high school, and you break up in high school, and this girl was really pretty. I mean, beautiful. And she gets the upperclassman's eye. Y'all break up. And then you hear that in the lunchroom, you hear that she slept with one of the upperclassmen. And Trey Hart begins to break instantly. Pain. Tears in his eyes. He's hurting. Is it hurt? And he has to run off to the bathroom just to understand how to consume all this hurt he just felt. And that's why we try to tell you guys that teen dating is stupid. Sex before marriage is stupid. It always ends up in somebody getting hurt. And I said yesterday that how fast this person, the girl that the Trey's first girlfriend that they end up having a sexual relationship, how fast after that first guy, it was easy for her to go to the next guy, to the next guy, to the next guy. And I want to touch on her real quick. I don't want to just leave it out there. She had some, we was all good friends back in junior high. We all dated. When you go to a little school like we did, everybody's dating everybody. So I was close friends when I knew her. And one thing that happened with her, what makes her kind of unique is, I remember, Trey, I don't know if you remember this, but I think we was at the movies this night, and we used to always go to the movies. And we didn't go to look at the movie, if you understand what I'm talking about. And we came home one night, and I don't know if she went where she was supposed to go, but I think her parents were arguing about who was going to take her or who was going to pick her. Well, she was there, so it couldn't have been who was going to pick her up. But her father shot and killed her mother right there in front of her face. She said she heard two gunshots. She was trying to, I think she told me she was trying to give her mouth to mouth, and just blood was coming out of her mom's nose, and she died right there on the spot, man. You remember that, Trey?
I remember that, man, and I remember talking with her about it. And, man, just how traumatizing it was for her in a way that you wouldn't expect. It wasn't like a trauma where she just boo-hooed and cried every day. It had more of a lasting effect on her. I remember her telling me about when he shot her in the face, and I remember she told me that he pointed the gun at her necks, and then he just walked out the door. And I remember her telling me that she tried to give her mom a mouth-to-mouth, and she grabbed her nose, as she's supposed to do, and that whole part of her face just slid off.
Oh, jeez.
Man, when she told me that, I remember her telling me and my mom that, and how calmly she told us. It was just riveting to hear somebody tell you that, because she wasn't necessarily crying when she said it. I just knew that, man, there's some deep emotional trauma that has not even been fully realized yet in this girl. And so I think that was one of the reasons why we were able to have so much sex and be as close as we were, because my mother and I were largely her support system at the time. And my mother was very close with her. And so it was after that, you know, we began to have all this sex and our relationship became really intense. And I think on her part, it was probably very easy for her to have somebody to lean on and get close to anybody.
Do you feel like you took advantage of her in that moment?
Oh, well, no, I wasn't even aware of it. I think it could have been anybody. You know, I liked her much before everybody. Like, she was gorgeous, man. The girl was like Italian, Russian, and black mix. She was gorgeous. Everybody liked her. So we had dated in the sixth grade, you know, Bruce. I always liked her, but I didn't fully realize until I was much older how emotionally available that situation actually made her. And, you know, as we both know, it wasn't like she was a saint before that happened. She had some promiscuity about herself even before that, but she hadn't had sex yet. And we just took it to that next level. Man, once you dive in, it's like a never-ending pit, man. It's just the intensity of it is definitely too much for a 14 or 15-year-old. And it's just very stupid, man, because it's going to end badly. But it does make her unique because, like I said, that trauma that she went through, and at the time she didn't have any other family. Her closest family was a great aunt of hers, and so she really didn't have
that's her. What I we, was thinking about the earlier today or yesterday, that after her father went to jail, her mother got shot and killed, and the closest relative she had was a great aunt.
Yeah.
And was that was that a blood great aunt, or?
You know, I'm not even sure, man. I want to say I think so some kind of way, but I couldn't even define for you how that relation worked. I don't even know, man. I want to say so, but I'm not entirely sure, man.
I remember one time, this is how broken she was, you know, just going through all these relationships. I think this is well after y'all broke up or something, and we was talking on the phone, and I think she just wanted some company, nothing more than just company. but she called me and said she wanted me to come over. I was like, well, I don't know. I'm at my dad's house. I don't know how I'm going to make that happen. And she said, well, just tell your parents that I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling down about my mom. And I was like, oh, my God. She wants me to use her mom as an excuse to come over her house.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what I did. No, but let's just move right along, man. If anybody knows where she's at, I don't want to put her name out there, but we haven't seen her in years, and we just would like to know if she's okay. Moving right along to the next relationship, number two. She was a grown woman. And Trey was, she was 15. She was letting Trey use the car. Now, this relationship, I don't think it lasted over 2 or 3 weeks. It looked like it started real fast, ended real fast. But she had she put something on Trey that he ain't never had before. Not like that, I guess. The stuff you told me about that, I've never heard that before. I never said Trey was in bliss of what this lady was willing to do and more than happy to do. And she turned Trey out. She blew his mind. His mind got blown. And as quickly as that relationship started, that relationship ended. And you really wasn't too hurt about it, though, huh?
Nah, I wasn't really too hurt because, again, I was old enough to know it wasn't really going anywhere, you know. But I liked it so much, I did not want it to end. So I was frustrated about that, angry more than anything. But, yeah, that situation, man, just was wrong in so many different ways, man. First, because it was birthed out of a church. You know, I met her because she was a counselor at this church, and she was 27 and I was 15, and she was very pretty, and it's just, looking back, it's still amazing as to why she would want to be involved with a 15-year-old, because, you know, she could have had anybody. But man, the things that she did, man, the nature of the relationship sexually was overwhelming for a 15-year-old, because it was not the usual dynamic where, you know, you're the aggressor and, you know, the woman just kind of gives in. Man, she was just absolutely overwhelming, man. And it was so fun to have somebody to want you in that way, and then just to do the things that she did in the way that she did. It was just, it took my ego up, and then it also, the saddest thing that did, it desensitized me to the seriousness of that type of sin, because all this is happening within the context of church, you know. And so she's a leader in the church, and it really just it did a mind thing to me, man, that I understand now. It came to an end because my parents, and mostly my grandmother, got involved, and I mean, she brought it to a screeching halt. And I just remember them being so angry about it, and I didn't even understand why, you know. And now looking back, I get it.
But she wasn't upset or how it is. She was always really sweet, too, and she was nice.
Yeah, she was just sweet, man.
Did y'all ever have any kind of argument or anything?
Oh, no, never. Never. We didn't, ever. It was pure fun the entire time.
And
the entire time, man.
A leader in the church. She was a leader in the church, and then she was a leader in the living room. Now, listen, let's go on to the next person, which is the most pivotal. Okay, this is the most pivotal relationship. I remember you telling me that years later, after y'all have broken up, I mean, you're at a point where you're just kind of down about your life, and you said the worst decision you've ever made was to be in this relationship, which also you call probably your funnest or the most love you've been in, as far as those three. It's the most fun you've had. It was probably your funnest relationship with her, but just the biggest mistake you've made. Because Trey was going to St. Lucia with her and got a word from the Lord, from his pastor, who was our mentor at the time, our pastor. This is the one we looked up to. He taught us the things of God. And what did he tell you, Trey? brief.
Man, I'll never forget, man, walking into his living room. And, again, I wasn't expecting to have any conversation about her. I was, you know, I let him know that I was going to leave and be gone for, you know, most of the summer. And we were going to the Caribbean before we went to college. And I went in his living room and sat down. And, man, he told me, he said, son, and it was the first time he'd ever used the word son in reference to me. He said, son, the Lord told me to tell you that this relationship is a trap from the devil. And he told me that she is not the one. He said, you need to leave her alone. And then he told me that you're either going to listen to my words and heed and obey them, or you're not, and you're going to see on down the line. And I remember a lot of different feelings coming to me when he said, number one was shock, because number, this is the first time anybody's ever said to me that the Lord told them directly to tell me something. I was not living at a point at the time where I could say that I heard the voice of God, where I knew he had spoke to me in, you know, his sentences or clear instructions about anything. You know, I might would have a witness or feel led in my heart, but this was very new to me for him to speak this specifically. And I remember feeling very offended because he did not know her, and we hadn't talked much about her. I mean, he knew I had a girlfriend, and I made sure to mention that we weren't having sex because I thought that might, you know, put it in better standing. You know, it did in my mind. And so when he said that, I remember feeling offended because it felt as if he was saying something about her, and he didn't even know her, and he wasn't, and it wasn't even what the Lord was saying. It had nothing to do with her intentions. It was that it was not from the Lord and that it was going to end badly for me. And he said those words. He said, this is going to end badly for you. And I just couldn't
and
see
let me
it
make
in
this,
any shape.
Let me make this point, and I didn't see it for years either. I mean, it took years on down the line where you see it really clearly how it ended badly. But let me make this point. The first two girls, you had a very much sexual relationship. But this one, you didn't. You wasn't having sex with her, but it was still the worst one of them all. It had the most effect on your life than them
all.
Well,
this girl was very different, man, but
just because somebody dates somebody or has a spouse, not spouse, you better be having sex with your spouse, but has a girlfriend or somebody who's not interested in having sex before marriage, doesn't mean that that's going to be the right relationship.
It does not mean that, man. And like I said before, man, this girl hit all of the, I guess, the standards and markers that I had set in my mind as far as somebody I'd like to be with, except for spiritually. I knew that we were not in tune spiritually. Now, that's not to say that she didn't believe in God or anything. She would tell you that she does. But she, you know, and again, at the time, I wasn't even walking right. I hadn't really made a decisive decision to follow the Lord myself. I was just interested in doing it, and I wanted to do certain things, but I hadn't really surrendered my life in that way. But she wasn't even heading that way at all. She wasn't really interested in spiritual things. As a matter of fact, we kind of clashed over them. It was an area we didn't touch much because it was understood that we didn't agree. Her mother was involved in another religion. And although she wasn't a part of it herself, it influenced and affected, of course, the way she thought about Christianity or traditional Christianity. And so, man, in my heart, I always knew that, you know, that it wasn't really from God, but at the same time, she hit all these markers, and I liked her in a different way than I had all the previous girls. As a person, I liked her. I liked her personality. We had a lot of the same goals. We thought a lot alike, had a lot of fun, had a lot of chemistry, had great conversation, and we just had a really great friendship and a lot of affection for each other. And so that's very dangerous, man, because, man, you know, the devil can send you the person that looks like what you think you want. And you don't even know what it is you want. You don't even know how wrong it is. But, man, they can look like it. And a lot of people in their mind, they settle for that. And it's not to say I was settling because I thought she was great. But in my heart I knew. And when Pastor told me that, man, I just decided that I did not heed it. And I remember you telling me shortly thereafter, and I just thought that was funny, and it really just further offended me. I remember you calling and telling me that the Lord told you to tell me not to go on this trip, and that if I wouldn't go, that he would bless me. And I remember feeling like, oh, man, Eric Hayden, man, because I'm finna leave the country and this, that, and I, my mind came up with every reason not to accept what you said. But at the same time, me knowing you, you know, I knew that there was something genuine in you and that I didn't believe that you would make anything like that up. So it bothered me. It really did bother me, and it brought to the forefront some stuff that was already in my heart as far as just knowing that in an area that's most crucial, me and this girl do not line up. And but what makes it most pivotal in my life, again, it's the first time that I got a word directly from the Lord not to be in a relationship or to stop the relationship, that it was not from God. And, man, you know, it's important that people know that once you decide to get in relationships without the leading of the Lord, you're going to develop feelings. And at that point, it's usually too late to tell you not to do it. Once your heart is tied in, my heart is definitely.
Too many people. I think I know one person, and I might say her name on the air because I don't think she'll have a problem. But I think there's one person, maybe I won't say her name, but who has told me she was in love with a guy. And her father told her to leave him alone. And she had to fight through a lot of feelings, but she ended up leaving him alone. And that's only one person in my life that I've heard that could go against their feelings and their flesh to do the right thing when it concerns somebody, a relationship. Man, I've never heard anybody else was able to do
it. Man, it's very rare, and I believe I know who you're talking about. And it's very rare, man. And, you know, sad to say, man, like we talked about yesterday, man, who you're in relationship and ultimately who you're going to marry, and choosing to get in relationships and sexual relationships sets up a pattern for you to choose wrong when you get married if you don't stop and start learning to listen to the Lord. You know, it is the who you're going to marry is the second most important decision you're going to make on earth. I can say that boldly. I think anybody with wisdom would agree. Aside from, you know, coming to know the Lord Jesus and really choosing to believe in and follow him, who you're going to marry is the most life-impacting decision that you're going to make. And sad to say, most people do it without the real inquiring of the Lord. I think it's so easy for us to get something we like that feels right, that might hit some kind of standard and markers we've set in our mind, and then we just kind of stamp God on it. We make it be from God in our mind. And,
man, I tell you, I'll say this, and we need to keep it moving. It talks about marriage when we're talking about marriage. I teach driver's ed, and I taught a lot of Indian students, a lot of people from India, and they have what are called arranged marriages. But they're not like, okay, I'm your father, I'm going to pick out your husband, you're going to marry him. No, that your family kind of, your parents do kind of pick out a guy or a girl. You meet them. If you guys don't like each other, then you don't have to marry each other. But that spouse, the family has to agree to them. Mm. And the divorce rate is so less. And I'm not saying that the parents should pick out everybody's spouse, but you, there has to be some kind of wisdom. You got to get some wisdom from somewhere. I mean, we thank God we're in a place that we have a pastor who we could. I took Stephanie straight to Pastor Scale's house when we talked about getting married. And if he would have said no, then I might have left her there. but just getting wisdom from people on the outside who doesn't have an emotional tie to this person, who doesn't have any special feelings for this person, to get a wise decision from people who are older, people who have been there, to say, yes, or to say, no, this is not the right person. No, another person, he just joined a church, and he was telling me he's been married before, and he said the most godliest person in his life was his grandmother, and his grandmother told him not to marry her. Don't marry her. He told him to wait. You'll see how she is, and he did it anyway, and it ended in a divorce, and now she's out somewhere. I think she got kids by like 4 or 5 different people, so just get wisdom. Anyway, let's move it right along, Trey. So you continue to date this girl, and you was told to stop. It's a trick from the devil. you both go off to college, and then at college, y'all break up just like couples do. It always ends in a breakup, and you started to get depressed. You started going through a depression. You quit going to class. You was doing a lot of eating. You was trying. I remember you was at the movies almost every day, it seemed like, and which eventually ran you into. I guess your mom was trying to get you some kind of antidepressants, and you weren't trying to take those. So she wanted you to talk to somebody about taking antidepressants. Is that right?
Yeah, she just wanted. I think ultimately her motive was to get somebody to convince me that there was a clinical, more medical side to depression that could be treated and dealt with. And I just didn't buy into it because, you know, you can't treat circumstances with a pill. You know, you have to. And I just didn't believe in it. So long story short, she introduced me or reintroduced me to somebody that had been in, that we had known for a long time, and they were a little bit older than me. She was a female who was had been depressed and going through a depression because she was in a bad marriage and separated. And she had this person call me. This was almost like long lost, family in a sense. And she introduced me to this person, man, and we began to talk, and she became a friend and a confidant, and I still didn't do the pill or medication thing, but we became close and became, you know, friends, and she became a source of comfort and a good friend to have during that period of time, and ultimately this relationship developed into something more romantic because we spent so much time talking on the phone and around each other. Whenever I did come back from college, it started while I was still in college, and I would come back on the weekends to visit to see her. And it developed into something that it should have never developed into. It was wrong on so many levels. I would have never chosen somebody older than me. I mean, she was just, you know, about 6 or 7 years older than me. And she had kids, it was just a mess on so many different levels. But when you're hurt, when you're depressed, when your judgment's compromised, and when you are in that state of just being overwhelmed by your feelings, you make decisions that you ordinarily wouldn't make. And so we got involved, and ultimately I brought this person around past the scales, and they began to really accept the word, and I like that about them because unlike all of the other girlfriends that I'd had previously, this was the first girl that I had that we had the commonality of the word, where we could actually talk about the things of God, where it wasn't an adversarial type of conversation when we would talk about spiritual things. And so I like that part of our relationship. And it just grew, man, and then ultimately developed all these feelings, and, you know, we got married. And let me back up by saying it's important to note that at developing these feelings, we also developed, of course, sexual attraction and had sex and did all these things. And we're trying to have this and at the same time, you know, be spiritual, which does not work. Let me ask you this real quick.
Do you believe you would have married her if you guys didn't have sex before marriage, a sex life?
No, I don't think it would have happened. I don't think it would have happened because the sex was a big part of the intensity of the emotions that we felt, man. You cultivate, it grows so much. You get in these, you know, they call them soul ties with people, man, when you share your body with somebody, especially that often. And so it intensified it so much. And men, you know, if we just be honest, it's really easy for us to fall in love with sex, man, and women. When they are in a mode of chasing or trying to secure the emotions and the commitment of a man, they know how to give of themselves very freely to make that happen. And so, man, that was a big part of it. It wasn't a conscious thing where, you know, I'm only with her to have sex or I'm going to marry her to have sex, but it played a big role in it emotionally and then ultimately the marriage as well because, you know, again, we were going to church and both had a desire to be spiritual, but we were both very hurt, very messed up. And, you know, marriage is a solution to being able to be together and have sex and not being sin. And so it was a logical next step. And, again, I had emotions and feelings for her, so it wasn't like I didn't want to be with her. So it was the perfect storm of just wrong decision-making, emotions, not being led by the Lord, not having the wisdom of God. And most people go through this, and then what's bad is that, you know, on the inside they might have a good heart and want to do right, man. But when you don't have wisdom, when you're not really dedicated to the idea that you are not going to enter into relationships unless you have the leading of God to do so, you're just bound to fail or enter into something that's going to cause you a lot of drama and a lot of pain in order to even maybe one day get to success. And so
y'all got married. You did get married. I remember another thing. Everybody around you was trying to tell you, don't do it. I remember your pastor told you, all right, let me pray about this. Well, he said, the Lord said that if you stay close to him, then you'll make it, but you're going to be miserable. And you didn't heed to those words. And I think I told you something like, Trey, within 3 days, you will feel very depressed about this situation. And those words came true. No, I'm just joking. I didn't say that. But I knew it was very quickly very wrong. It felt wrong to everybody. People you was really close to told you, wait, don't do it. But you did it anyway. Pastor Scales told you it was going to be miserable. And Trey, how long did it take you to be miserable after you got married?
Oh, man, it was immediate. It was like a light switch just going off, man. It's absolutely immediate, man. All of the dynamics changed so tremendously, and neither, I don't think, the husband nor the wife even know what they've entered into, why it's changed. It's just immediately different, man, because, I'm talking about it was instant, man. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing to mention, and there are a lot of different ways that, you know, I guess we could discuss this, but one of the most profound things, especially as a young man, I was 21 at the time, and so we just have to be honest about the fact that, and women need to hear this, men need to be honest about this, that sex is a big deal to us. You can pretend like it's not, but it is. And,
yes, sir.
And it just is, man. And, and the thing is, I didn't want anybody but my wife at the time, so I wasn't looking to be promiscuous or anything like that, but it's still a big deal, man. Men want to have sex, and they want the person they're with to want to be with them. And, man, that stopped almost immediately, and I had no clue why. In my mind, to be honest, I thought that it would actually even get better now that we're married because, again, like I said, leading up to marriage, we had finally become abstinent and decided we were going to do the right thing and trust the Lord and enter our marriage the right way. And I actually thought we were going to get married and it was going to be blessed. And not to say that it can't for people, but when you've lived wrong before you got married, man, you have set yourself up, man, for real problems into marriage. Because what happens is the same flesh and the same temptation from the devil, the same push and drives he gives you to have sex when you're not married, he works through that same flesh and those same desires to cut it off once you do get married. It's the devil. Of course, he's for sex when you're not married, and he's against it when you are. And you don't even know this. And so the woman in particular just starts going through attacks, man, to not want to be with her husband. She gets poisoned. Now all of a sudden things bother her about you that ain't never been any different. It's just very different. Expectations change. You know, whereas before we weren't married, everything I did for you, it was a favor, it was a blessing. Now there's expectations to be met, and when they're not met, there's hurt, there's offense, and all that follows you to the bedroom. And so the sexual dynamic changed immediately, and it was unexpected to me. I did not know that was going to happen, and it was very offensive because, like I said, when we got married, at the time I was making a lot of money. I bought a big house and moved her and the two boys she had into it. I just took over all of the finances and really tried my best to, you know, provide for her a good lifestyle, as any husband would want to do. I took pride in, you know, providing a nice lifestyle for my family. And, again, all of that wasn't necessarily wisdom. I put a lot on myself. I made my standard of living very high and put a lot of demand on myself to make a lot of money. And And for a while I did. And so struggling through that to make that happen while not having my knees, it was very offensive, man. And I think for her, looking back, again, some of the wisdom, man, that is just should be common sense, but it's not when you're being led by your feelings. She had just gone through a marriage, of course, when we had met, and she was just recently divorced, so she wasn't healed from all of those old hurts. She brought all of that into the marriage, and she was just going through a rough time on her own, didn't even know that she was being attacked by the devil. She started getting depressed, and it was just miserable, man. I remember being 21 years old, you know, having a 4,000-square-foot house, Cadillac, money in my pocket, and a wife. And at the time, you know, her two boys would spend half their time with us and half their time with their grandparents on their father's side. So there'd be every other weekend, we'd be free to do whatever we want, man. I wanted to travel. I've just been married. I'm ready to have fun. And, man, I come home, it'd be 7 o'clock, and she's sleeping in the bed and through on a Friday night. And I'm 21,
and
married, with nothing to do.
What would you do to cope with that? I remember exactly what you're talking about. Man, it's bringing back memories. What were some of the things you used to do just to cope with the emptiness you was going through?
Well, man, one thing that I did not want to do, man, I tried my best, man. I did not want to become unfaithful, and it was the perfect storm to be unfaithful. And so, man, I tried to satisfy my flesh and occupy my mind in every other way. I watched a lot of TV, a lot of movies, ate a lot of food, and then I even got to, I guess you could call it substance abuse, but, I mean, I never, you know, I hadn't smoked, you know, marijuana or drank or anything like that in since my teenage years, but man, I did come across these, what they call THC brownies. I always like to eat, and so, man, I used to get these brownies, man, and they're extremely potent, and, man, you know, you could eat one brownie, and it's like the equivalent of like the highest potency of marijuana you could find, and it would just absolutely have my mind just at ease, have me silly. It would take the edge off, man. So I was eating these brownies unbeknownst to my family and just to deal. I'd come home every evening, man, and have a brownie just to deal, man, just to take the edge off, man. And I spent a lot of time.
I remember you telling me that, and I was like, what is Trey doing? Because I haven't known you to be that kind of guy in so long to go towards drugs, you know, in so long, you know, those have been in our past. And to hear you tell me that you've been eating these brownies, and then you would say you would watch like Cat Williams or somebody, a comedian, and you said you would be absolutely rolling. It would just be that much more funnier to you when you were watching
those comedians. Oh, it was, man. I never liked drugs. The only reason I couldn't get hooked to drugs, I didn't like the after effects. I don't like not being clean. I don't like smelling bad. I don't like hangovers. I don't like none of that. And so the brownie was the perfect thing because you don't smell nothing. There's nothing. It's like eating a brownie, and it tastes really good, and you get all of the effect. And so, man, I used that as a coping mechanism, man, and it made me so silly, man, and just where I could laugh rather than just be miserable and cry. So I'd get fun. I'd watch TV and zone out, man. I spent a lot of time. I would go and sit at my mom's house and talk. Me and my mom were always very close, and I didn't have anybody else really to talk to that I wanted to talk to anyway. So I spent a lot of time at my mom's, which is another very bad piece of advice, man, to when people go through rough times in their marriage, man, you end up talking to somebody, and that person needs to be somebody spiritual that has your best interests at heart, that's not biased towards you one way or another. And that was not my mom, even though she didn't try to give me any bad advice, but it's not wisdom to go put your marriage out there to people who even though they love you, they can't point you to Jesus. They're going to be biased, and then if your marriage ever does get restored, they're still going to have on their mind what you told them that's wrong. And so I did a lot of that, but in my mind I was doing it out of, you know, just to not go anywhere else. You know, I didn't want to go to no club. I didn't want to, you know, end up somewhere that was not the right place to be. So I did that a lot, and, you know, watched
your
a lot
of
movies.
Your mom is very biased. Your mom, Trey's mom loves him more than anything else in this world. She will side with Trey, especially back then. I mean, she was ultra biased. I mean, she called me up, me and my brother one day, cussing us out because we did something wrong to Trey. So mom is like super mom for Trey. She's going to take the bat to your head, Trey. So that was probably the wrong person to run to. And in fact, usually family members, mothers, usually those are the wrong people to run to. But Trey, you also dealt with a lot of depression, and I remember you said you were suicidal at one time. Talk about that.
Man, there was a time where, you know, I never put any plan into action or anything like that, but I have to say, man, there was lots of times where I thought, and it's sad to say, man, I was 21, 22, and, man, I just felt so trapped, man. I was not happy about, you know, I had expired all of the ways of chasing happiness that I could produce myself. And I still wasn't excited about life. I had bought everything that the money that I had could buy. I wasn't rich or anything, but I had a nice, you know, I had a sizable amount of income every month, and I, you know, clothes and cars and, man, just anything you could think of, man, and it just doesn't work. And I was just ready to not exist. I was ready to not go through. I was so unhappy, man, and there was, and then what's so crazy, in my mind, divorce was not an option. You know, I remember your dad telling me, Trey, why don't you just start over? It ain't like it's the end. And for some reason, going on to heaven was more reasonable to me than just getting a divorce. But, but man, I was, man. I was very, very, you know, man.
Trey,
I was
get to the plan, Trey. I want to hear, this is how messed up your mind was. When I heard this, I knew you were going through something real deep. Tell, if you don't mind sharing, if you do, don't say it. But what was your plan on suicide?
I told you this one day. Well, I can't say it was a plan, but I would lay up a lot at night and think, man. I used to think. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do no matter what was take care of my family. And so in my mind, this thought came to me about how could I kill myself and my family's, because at the time, you know, I had a sizable insurance policy on myself for, you know, my family's protection. And so, you know, I knew with insurance policies, if you commit suicide, man, you do not get a payout. And so I was thinking about how could I do it. And I actually had the idea of taking a hit out on myself, of paying somebody to pay somebody to eliminate me. That way that it couldn't really be drawn back to me, because it would have to be a homicide in order for me to get paid, and then it couldn't ever be exposed that I was, you know, of course you couldn't hire somebody to kill yourself, so you could hire somebody and have them go hire somebody. It was really crazy, man, just really devilish, demonic thinking, man.
That's
and
it,
you know,
man.
I never
what,
put
when you told me that, I was like, what in the world? Because I didn't know how serious you were. I knew you had to be pretty brave to do something like that, but you by no means sound like it was just a distant ha-ha-ha moment. And, man, I was like, dude,
no,
you
man,
must have lost your mind.
I was extremely miserable. And you got to keep in mind, man, during all this time, we're going to church every Sunday, and we're doing all this. I mean, I was miserable, man. And, again, I don't want to make it sound any better or worse than it was. There were high times. There were some good times. There were, you know, it wasn't just – and that's what
there
makes it so
Trey.
Bad.
We you never always try to play the middle of the road, Trey. You always try to play the middle of the road. I wasn't too miserable, but I wasn't too happy. Listen, man, we got 20 seconds. And, man, I guess we're going to have to try to end this tomorrow somehow. But I really want to hit on tomorrow, you got to tune back in. And Trey said he was willing to talk about it, how his decisions led him into the profession of selling drugs. And I believe it's going to be very important that you tune in tomorrow. Man, we're against it right now. Trey, man, I really appreciate it. You going to have time tomorrow?
Man, anytime, Big E. I'm here for you, man.
Man, I love you so much, man. Thanks for being so honest and open, man. And we just pray that this is going to help so many people. Man, tomorrow, man, Trey's going to talk about his decision on these relationships, especially the third one, how it led him to a career of selling drugs. All right. Man, thanks a lot, man. God bless everybody.
This is the fourth installment of the Choose the Joy broadcast. I believe I got some outro music. Hold on, let me see if this don't work, Trey. I love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.